Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America Hot Sheet Show. And we're excited to see you today because we're talking all about September call-ups. We've got a whole lot more big leaguers, a lot of prospects coming up to the majors. We're going to break them all down for you. And as always, we're going to take your questions. If you have questions about a call-up that you want to see come up, who do you think is going to be the most impactful call-up? Who are you missing? Who's not up that you think should be up? Let us know in the comments. We will take your questions as we love to do on every show. Also, do remember, please like and subscribe so you can get all of the great content at Baseball America on the YouTube channel. I'm glad to see you. Let's go to our first move. September call-ups are here. And we've had a couple kind of trickling in a little bit early. We'll get to some of those. But I would say the most significant name that we've seen who is a true roster expansion September call-up, the Padres are bringing up Ethan Salas, the catcher, top catching prospect in the game, and one of the youngest catchers we've seen in the big leagues, basically in our lifetimes. Josh, you've been watching Ethan Salas. You've been seeing Ethan Salas. I remember a conversation with you, I want to say, on the backfields when he was catching big leaguers when he was 16. Here he is all these many 4 years later, and he's up in the big leagues. What can we expect? What should we expect with Ethan Salas coming up to the majors?
I'm very curious to see what it's going to be like because he is 20 years old, and he's, if you wanted to talk about, like, I guess the word would be training age. He did miss roughly a year last year, almost the entire year, but he rebounded in a big way this year, and he's looked exactly like the guy everyone thought he would be when he signed. He was, you know, an excellent defensive catcher, leader of a pitching staff, can hit for some power, can throw. I mean, I wrote a couple days ago, a week ago, that this is exactly the kind of move that AJ Preller likes to make. Take a guy who's, you know, they're high on in the organization, move him quickly, and now they're going to put him in the middle of a playoff race. And if they wouldn't do that if they didn't believe he had the type of makeup to handle that kind of pressure. So I expect he's going to immediately kickstart what should be a very long, fruitful career.
I would say that, yeah, you kind of hit on it. Like, coming into the year with the injuries he had last year, there wasn't really, we're kind of getting pretty far away from the last time Ethan Salas had really kind of a stretch in the minors where he performed the way you expect him to perform. Can't say that now. He's had a very good year. The defense has always been very strong reputation for his defense. In addition to now, he's hitting very well as well. I would say that he's one of those guys who the range of outcomes are from longtime big leaguer, probably, you know, to star. But it's really kind of hard with his defensive reputation. As long as he can stay healthy, it's kind of hard to imagine him not having a lengthy big league career. Jeff, another guy who just came up who I would say has a much wider range of outcomes. The Mariners have brought up just before the September 1st roster expansion, but they brought up Lázaro Montes, the outfielder, looking to kind of kickstart that offense. We know that Lázaro Montes has massive power. There's no question about that. What do you see, though? Like, why is he kind of a much more higher variance prospect for a guy hitting the majors than someone, say, like Ethan Salas?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing right off the rip is the difference in defensive ability, the difference in defensive value. It probably couldn't be more stark from such a polished defensive catcher despite being 20 years old and Salas. But when we look at the hitters, it's sort of the same conversation. Salas is among two other elite prospects that had, you know, in zone swing and miss rates that were under 11%, a 90th percentile EV of 105 or higher. Those other two guys are Josue DePaula, and Walker Jenkins. I mean, it's the best power and hit tool combinations in the minors. That's who he compares to. When we look at a player, like Lázaro Montes, we're sort of looking at your prototypical three true outcome type of a hitter, a player that hits the ball incredibly hard, does not necessarily make a whole lot of contact. And I think that's the thing that you have to be concerned about. When you look at a guy like Salas, it's like, it's easy to sort of project out what that's going to look like. Once he sees better competition, he makes enough contact that you're not really worried about there being like extreme amounts of swing and miss over an extended period of time. When you look at somebody like Montes, he swings and misses in zone against breaking balls at astronomical rates. He'll swing and miss against velocity at astronomical rates. What he's really living off of is swing decisions, which are fringy. They're not necessarily great, but enough that he kind of keeps himself in at bats and works deep into counts, and just that quality of contact. It's a 108.8 90th percentile EV, which is one of the best in the minor leagues. He has balls at above 118 this season in terms of his max EV. It's around a 50% hard hit rate. He demolishes baseballs. The quality of contact, I'm not exaggerating when I say it's 80 grade in terms of the amount of barrels he catches, how hard he hits it, at the angles that he hits them at. It's just how frequently is he going to hit the baseball against minor league pitching? I think that's a major question, and it's what leads to a wide variety of outcomes with somebody like Montes, from, you know, 40 home run bat and major league home run leader to a guy that never really finds his footing in the big leagues. I think all of those outcomes are possible.
You hit on the key thing is you're talking about a left fielder, probably, you know, maybe a right, but not going to provide a lot of defensive value either. So that puts more expectation on the bat. Jeff, we've also got Leo Bernal coming up for the Cardinals. The Cardinals, who have so many catchers, Bernal better get his kind of his playing time in here. He's got Raniel Rodriguez coming up behind him. We've got Jimmy Crooks already up in the big leagues. We've got Pedro Páez as well. What should Cardinals fans expect from Leo Bernal?
Well, we'll see if it means anything, JJ. But they actually sent Crooks down to AAA today, so Bernal is going to get a little bit more playing time than I think people probably anticipate or expect. A couple of things I want to point to here. I think that there were some questions around his bat this year coming into the season. There were some questions, not really about his defense. This guy did win a minor league gold glove. I think it was a little exaggerated, but the framing, the actual catching and throwing has been excellent, you know, since he came into professional baseball. It was the blocking that he really needed to get control of. He's taken major steps forward in that regard. The bat has also taken steps forward. And I think something else, I saw Kyle Reese, who does great work covering Cardinals prospects on Twitter, call out. And I hadn't really made this connection, but when he said it was a kind of an aha moment. He's also worn down throughout the season, throughout his career, which is normal for a young catcher and normal for a lot of young players, but not necessarily a good sign. Marcelo Meyer still kind of dealing with that, not a catcher, but a guy who always wore down toward as the season ranged on. I think the fact that Bernal has gotten stronger as the year has gone on, as Kyle had pointed to, is a great sign and probably something that gives the Cardinals in this loaded farm system, loaded with tons of catchers, you know, before and behind them, a fair amount of confidence that Bernal is a guy that they can plug in right away, can give them, you know, quality at bats from both sides of the plate, and also, you know, do the job behind the plate, which is probably one of the toughest jobs in professional sports, is being a primary catcher, doing the things defensively, handling the pitching staff, doing all those things, because at an instant, you know, runs are potentially on the board if you make a mistake. So I think Bernal has gotten their confidence at this point, is an interesting player, maybe not going to blow it out in terms of the stat line, but I think just a really good player that does a lot of things really well, and at the end of the season could be a big contributor. So not going to do a lot this year, but I think as you're looking forward with this Cardinals team, this might actually be your everyday catcher of the future.
I would say the guy who came up last week who kind of fits in this, we didn't have a chance to talk about him because he came up after the show last week, but Josh Walker Jenkins coming up. If we're talking about Ethan Salas as being the most prominent prospect who came up at the September roster expansion, Walker Jenkins is one of the most significant prospects to come up all season. What is a realistic kind of like outcome? What should we hope for? What should Twins fans expect to see from Walker Jenkins going forward?
Eventually, a five-tool player and a face of the franchise. I mean, it's pretty simple. Feel like I'm going to say a lot of the same things I said about Salas, because, you know, they're not obviously not the same player, but Jenkins' career has been littered by injuries, and it took a little bit to get him healthy and see the true depth of his potential, but he can hit. He can hit for power that he's finally shown this year. I say finally at like age 21 after so many different injuries. He can play the field. He can run. He can throw. He can do everything. And he's a guy who's not afraid of the spotlight either, as he's shown in, you know, multiple interviews on the big stage at the Futures game. Guy can do it all. And he, you know, he was very highly lauded during his draft class for a reason, as a player who would go as high as he has and be that kind of guy. You know, I would have really, really high hopes if I were a Twins fan seeing Jenkins come up, even if it doesn't, you know, translate this year.
Jeff, when I think of Walker Jenkins, I know he's had injuries, he had a multitude of injuries. That's really kind of the only concern, the only if statement I would say with Walker Jenkins. When we talk about Walker Jenkins as a prospect, as a hitter, I feel about as good about him because of the pure hitting ability and the developing power as I do pretty much anyone in the minors. If you said, like, hey, I think that Jesus Madey, I think that there are guys who could end up being better because of positional value. But if you told me that Walker Jenkins is the most productive long-term player in the minors when he came up, I don't think that's a crazy idea, is it?
No, I don't think it's a crazy idea at all. And I think it's interesting. He's almost served as like a case study for these like projectable, you know, MLB body types that have the really polished hit tool, but the power hasn't necessarily translated in game yet. It felt like sort of looking year over year, you saw kind of the progression last year in terms of him adding that actual raw power to his game. He started hitting the ball a lot harder, more consistently. And this year he took the step forward of hitting the ball harder in the air more consistently, which has then translated to more barrels, which has translated to more home runs. And he's never really had to sacrifice at all, actually, you know, the quality of his hit tool, which is plus. You know, this guy has faced the highest, you know, competition in the minors throughout the season and has run like a sub 8% in zone swing and miss rate. That's an outrageous number that even if you kind of factor in the error bar of someone jumping to the big leagues, and that number might even double, right? 14% in zone whiff rate for a guy with power like he has, speed, the ability to play in the outfield, play multiple positions in the outfield. It's just really, really valuable. And I think as he starts to, you know, mature a little bit in his approach, will probably get pitched around a little bit more. He'll start to see more pitches. You'll see the walk rates go up as well. I think in terms of what the ceiling is here, and we've been saying this really since Walker Jenkins got drafted, is this could develop into one of the best combinations of hit tool and power in the major leagues.
It's a really special package. We'll see what, you know, again, the main thing is just please, Walker Jenkins, we root for prospects. Please stay healthy. That's been a problem with leg injuries. This year it was he ran into a wall trying to make a catch. He's had a variety of things, but lately he's been healthy, and lately he's been mashing. He comes up coming off of the best power surge he's had really anywhere through his minor league career. That is a look at some of the September call-ups coming up. Josh, thank you for joining us. Josh, Jeff is going to stick around. We're going to talk about Cade Anderson, his first couple starts, and his adjustment to the majors right after this break.
Kratz, I think what people are seeing on the screen and what we'll explain to the podcast audio crowd right now is how I'm a little summer action with Fabletics, and then you take us into fall and a little more layering.
And here in the East, I'm still going to go to the shore in the fall. I love the shore in September. You come in from the beach, you throw on a sweatshirt like this. It's light, it's breathable, but you know what? It is so comfortable.
Yeah, and for me, I love working out, but also I'm getting more into tennis, paddle, a little bit of pickleball, all that. I want lightweight, breathable, comfortable, and affordable. Let's talk about that. The discounts for Fabletics are massive when you sign up as a VIP. Shop now at Fabletics.com/Fal to get 70 to 80% off everything when you sign up as a new VIP. Take a quick style quiz. Be sure to select Fal when prompted to unlock this offer. This is a limited time offer, so don't wait. Again, that's Fabletics.com/Fal for 70 to 80% off everything as a new VIP.
Okay, he doesn't count as a September call-up. He came out too early for that. But Cade Anderson, the Mariners lefty, has now made two starts in the big leagues. We have two starts in the big leagues to analyze, but we also have one of the best seasons we've seen from a pitcher in the minor leagues, really, in years, decades, lifetimes. It's right. A remarkable season, especially when you consider how offensive the minors is this year. But Jeff, now that we've seen two starts in the big leagues. Anything change for you? Any thoughts that have adjusted at all for Kate Anderson?
Yeah, I think it's always funny, right? There's sort of these narratives with pitching prospects, and they're not always they surface in the media, but it's stuff that comes from conversations behind the scenes with people who are a lot smarter than myself, and that's pitching analysts, amateur analysts with teams, people who break down and work with pitchers, trainers, that there's sort of concepts and ideas that we're familiar with when it comes to IVB and spin rate and spin efficiency, and sort of putting all those things together and understanding it is one thing, but I think, you know, the actual application of it, like you get from a lot of these conversations, is a different thing. And something that we had heard about Kate Anderson, I think dating back to when he was dominating at LSU in his final season there and won a national championship, was he can pitch his butt off. There's no questions about that. You know, the pitch ability is off the charts. It's left-handed. The stuff is good, but not great. And there were questions around the fastball shape. And I think it was the same for a former LSU pitcher, Paul Skeens. He added velocity, added some pitches to the mix. Things went really well. This year, he's lost a little velocity. And now that fastball shape is becoming more of a conversation. So why it became such an issue with Anderson is because of him jumping from double A to the major leagues. Most of the pitchers and players that we see debut, JJ, most of these guys are spending a significant amount of time in triple A. The Mariners, just in terms of process, do not like to do that. Very little. We went over this weeks ago when we were talking about Kate Anderson and his potential jump from double A to the big leagues. I know you kind of broke it down with the different pitchers, but whether it was Brian Wu, you know, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, most of these guys spent little to no time in AAA. The reason that that's relevant, JJ, is because AAA for the last few seasons has been using the same baseball as the major leagues. The other levels have a different baseball. What's different about the two baseballs? They're manufactured differently. The major league balls and AAA balls are hand sewn, while the other balls for the minor leagues, whether it's double A, all the way down to the complex league levels, JJ, all of those balls are manufactured in China by a machine. So that kind of immediately creates some differences in how the balls are manufactured. There's differences in the leather. I don't know if there's differences in the actual string that's used with the seams, et cetera, but how the seams come out is very different. Where if you have a major league ball, you will see that you have flatter, sort of wider seams. So it just plays a little bit differently, where when you grab the minor league ball, you see that the seams are raised a little bit. You can kind of dig in a little bit more. If you're someone who throws a lot like I do, mostly BP at this point, I'm not pitching in games. You know, you can kind of dig in and spin it a little bit more when you have those chunkier seams, like you're almost seeing like a little league ball. Going from that baseball to the major league ball for a pitcher like Kate Anderson is a bit of a problem, because what Anderson does well with his four-seam fastball is he creates movement because of how efficiently he spins the baseball. But he doesn't spin the baseball a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of raw spin to play with there. So any sort of drop in raw spin is going to directly impact how much he can backspin, which is what you do with a four-seam fastball. You backspin it as opposed to, you know, a curveball, which you topspin. Think about it with your golf game. Nice backspin, you know, drive versus a topspinning one, how that kind of stays low. So I think the two differences there are the biggest thing, is when he loses a little bit of spin, what that translates to is that efficiency can't create as much movement as it did on the minor league ball. And we saw that immediately with a 200 RPM drop in spin. And then we also saw the drop in induced vertical break by a couple of inches over the course of those two starts. So I think those are the two things that you're probably looking at with the most concern. Some of that ride did come back in the second start. We have seen guys like this that had efficient fastballs, like at Emmett Sheehan, JJ. We've seen guys like that recover a couple years later, coming back to the big leagues. It was an injury for Sheehan in between, getting that spin that he had in double A, plus the ride that he had in double A, and getting that fastball that he had previously using those minor league balls. So it's a really interesting quirk to our game, and just like another thing that makes evaluation so tough.
I just want to know that also something we've talked about is that I think that there, because of the season he had, there's understandably kind of this expectation with Cade Anderson that might get a little bit overheated, which is the reason he's a top prospect for us is the kind of, we would say, the likelihood of a long-term successful big league career as a pitcher, less than it is the chances of him being an ace. He just really doesn't probably have the pitch mix. You talked about the adjustments with the ball, but just velocity and all that, to be that kind of front of the rotation ace, probably more of a very solid starter. It's going to be fun to watch, see what he does going forward. Mariners are going to be fun to watch. Got him, Lázaro Montes, we talked about in the first segment, but we've got a ton of questions that we want to get to also. And we will get to those right after this break.
Do you remember growing up and seeing that something was sold out and it was literally sold out and you couldn't get a ticket?
Yes,
that's not a thing anymore.
Cried many times over that, Scott. But now we have SeatGeek. Mm-hmm. Even if it says sold out, you can find that perfect seat for you.
Yep. The official ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball is SeatGeek to find that seat for you, whether it's down the stretch, a team that you're following that's going to play postseason ball, or whatever you're going to game for. You want to see a particular pitcher. Eventually, playoff tickets, same thing, right? Playoff tickets, generally sold out. Don't worry. SeatGeek has the spot.
Find your green dot. Find the green dot. Red dot, bad deal. Green dot, great deal. There's plenty of green dots for whatever game you want. Find it. Mm-hmm. Buy your tickets and go enjoy the game.
Code Territory10, 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any MLB tickets with the promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app, and then the code will automatically be added to your account so that you can use it later.
As always, final sprint. We're going to spend the time taking your questions in the chat. But before that, we did want to at least acknowledge something that very significant that also happened today. We have news that the Angels, Artie Moreno, is selling the team to the owner of the also LA Rams, Dan Kroenke. He's going to become the new owner. Obviously, still has to be approved. But one thing we'll just note with that is that I think this is, if you're going to talk about a time to buy the Angels, right now might be that time. Farm system's getting better. Some of the worst of Artie Moreno's, kind of push for like win now has kind of been a little bit reduced in the most recent years, really this year. Kind of they let prospects kind of develop a little bit more patiently this year. So we'll see what that means in the long term. But I do think that this obviously in the long term could be very good news for Angels fans. But let's get to your questions. First question I believe we have is a Kevin Alvarez question. Houston Astros outfielder. Question, I believe, from Nam 37 is, what is your take on Astros top prospect Kevin Alvarez? Looks great so far, especially for an 18-year-old. Jeff, no better person to ask. You've been talking about Kevin Alvarez. You write up the Astros for us. What should we know about Kevin Alvarez?
Yeah, I think, this is one of those players we kind of just talked about a little bit with Walker Jenkins. Now, different types of athletes, for sure. But a guy who kind of came into pro ball, projectable build to add some power, add some strength. We've seen him take a pretty big jump in terms of the EVs this year. I'd have to double check on what his number was last year. I think it was around 100 in terms of the 90th percentile EV. He's above 104 this year. But the plate skills are excellent. Good swing decision. Doesn't let a lot of stuff go over the heart of the plate without attacking it. Good balance of sort of aggression and passivity and sort of discerning between balls and strikes. Makes a ton of contact in zone, 13.7% in zone miss rate this season. I think, when you think about the fact that he jumped a domestic level in terms of jumping over the Florida Complex League and going right to A ball, and it's a better year for the Carolina League, it's still not the easiest place for a lot of hitters to hit. I think that's one of the reasons that we jumped him above Xavier Nyens, who's a player that we like, as the number one player in that Astros farm system. Probably a corner outfielder, not a ton of defensive value, maybe an average to fringe average right fielder or left fielder long term, but I think one that's going to hit for a long time, hit for average, get on base, and probably develop into more power over the next 2 to 3 seasons.
Okay, next question. We have a fun one, talking about two catching prospects. We were talking about Cardinals catching prospects earlier. Ben Fullenkamp asks, who do you see a higher possibility to stick at catcher between Raniel Rodriguez and Alfredo Duno? Cardinals catcher prospect versus Reds catching prospect. Both elite hitting prospects, also top 100 prospects. Jeff, I'll let you answer first and I'll give my thoughts too. We may disagree on this one, but who do you think more likely to be a long-term catcher?
Yeah, this might be the bias of like our proximity, right? Because you have covered the Reds for a long time, covered the Cardinals for a long time. I actually have been impressed lately with Rodriguez's catching. I came into the season with a pretty low opinion of it, had saw it in spring training and watched a little bit last year. I think he has improved back there in terms of as a blocker, as a receiver. The arm has always been good. He can make some great throws, but he just seems like he's bouncing a little bit better back there, if that's a weird expression to use, but just in terms of how comfortable he is in the crotch. I tend to think that it's something that's like you have sort of this like buoyancy to you, like this bounciness to you. So I've seen a lot of that. He's receiving well, he's blocking well, he's, you know, threw a couple of base runners the other day in their Sunday game, and is doing it at the plate. So I think there's a chance that he sticks there. I also think I trust the Cardinals' ability to develop catching. They've done it pretty well over the course of the last couple of decades.
So I'll slightly disagree. I agree with you a lot of what you said, but the thing I'll say for the Duno with the Reds is with Tyler Stevenson nearing free agency, Sal Stewart established at first base, kind of feel like that the Reds really have a whole lot of incentive to develop Duno and kind of give him opportunities as a catcher, develop as a catcher. He's shown the proclivity for it. He's just so big. He's basically Salvador Perez size. Think of that. So that's kind of the biggest concern, but that's going to be a fun, fascinating one to watch for years to come. One more question here. Got too many to answer today. Sorry about that. But question here is Sports Cards Daily Vids asks, have the Brewers continued their amazing run of international signing classes? It seems like Ricky Moniz and Diego Frontado have bright futures. Yes, they do. I'll answer this one. Yes, they do. And that's not it. I wish Josh was still here for this one because Josh is currently working on our Dominican Summer League top 30 prospects. I would expect at least 4 Brewers to make that top 30, maybe more. It's an incredibly loaded system in the DSL class this year again. That comes after, obviously, guys like Alexander Frias, who they had last year. Comes after Jesus Madey, Luis Peña, Jackson Churio. Cardinals are just doing this. I mean, the Brewers are just doing this over and over and over. It's very impressive to watch. And that is our Baseball America Hot Sheet live show for this week. We thank you for all the questions. As always, we love answering your questions. We thank you for joining us. And we also love when you like and subscribe at the Baseball America YouTube channel. For Jeff and Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody. Have a great week.